Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker, Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There's some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Lily Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. When you're listening to this, the summer is coming to a symbolic end, and it is Labor Day week. What a summer.
Yeah, well, spoiler alert, we're pre-recording this, but when this comes out, I will be on my honeymoon.
Elise will be a wife.
I will be wifed up. I'll have put a ring, a second ring, on top of the first ring to enclose the rings.
Exciting stuff.
Lord of the Rings. Yes.
I will be a Lord of the Rings by the time this comes out.
Big promises. So in honor of Labor Day week, we wanted to talk about work today. It's something I've been thinking about. It sort of feels like it's been in the air between, you know, Simone Biles, making a real boss moves at the Olympics. That's her job. The pandemic has really challenged how a lot of people view work and what they're willing to accept. So it's tangential to what we normally talk to. Obviously, if a lot of policies were better, work wouldn't be as anxiety producing for a lot of reasons, from insurance to childcare. So it is related. It is on brand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
I didn't mean to start with this question, but this question is all about Millie, because both of you make a living in maybe vaguely similar ways. I mean, neither of you both have lots of jobs that you have to keep up with. Mm-hmm. At least I guess you have some primary sources of income with your various projects. But Millie, I feel like the typical trajectory is like people start in comedy or acting and then they give up because it's too hard, or they don't feel like they've made it. And then they maybe go into the corporate world. You kind of did the opposite, right? You started off with a more like traditional work situation at companies and then stopped or left, it seems, to pursue writing and comedy. Can you like tell us about your professional path?
Yeah, it's dumb. That was stupid. No. I think
it's fit for a premium cable 12 episode series, honestly.
Well, I think that, you know, I think it all came from like, it was like a lot of things, right? Like where I went to school, there was not really like a performing arts degree. And I didn't really see, like, even in my neighborhood, like where I grew up, like there were not a lot of examples of people who like left and went to school, you know? So it was already like an outlier to go to college out of state and like whatever. And then even from there, I had no examples of like actually working artists that, you know, it kind of seems like, you know, what's the point of doing a creative career if, you know, you're going to be broke, which is the whole reason why you went to college in the first place, right? That was kind of my thing. And I actually applied to Columbia College in Chicago, but I don't know if I ended up applying, but like, yeah, it just didn't seem like a viable career option. And I actually like, in college, I was taking the LSAT. I wanted to be a lawyer and like studied for it and everything. And I got like a pretty not great score.
You did, you know? Take the test. Wow.
I took the test and I almost was going to retake it. But then I was like, I just thought like, oh yeah, like I should do something that's worthy or valuable to society, or I should try to like bring, you know, and it was very much like, people in my college, they all want, you know, at least while we were in school, they were all talking about like, I want to work in the UN. I want to work for Amnesty International. I want to do Peace Corps. It was very much that kind of college. It was very global and people spoke multiple languages and it was very international and stuff. So I felt like, you know, even though I enjoyed, my whole thing was like, I want to be a lawyer so I can be a judge, so I can have my own judge TV.
And you then, do now.
Well, and you worked around that.
I worked around that. But then, yeah, after, you know, I guess it was just trial and error of like, when I hit an obstacle with law school, like where I didn't get a great score and I wasn't getting into good schools or anything, I was like, okay, it seems like I'm going to really have to work at this. Like, I'm going to really have to work hard at this. Is this really what I want to work hard for? And the answer was no. So I was like, okay, let me try something else. And I tried nonprofit and I was like, okay, this sucks. And then I tried, like, and then I did. So then when I got into like the corporate world and marketing, I was like, okay, but you know, I was in New York, like I didn't have that many friends and I always enjoyed like going to comedy shows and I would, you know, go to UCB stuff. And then I got the diversity scholarship. And yeah, I was, you know, I was like a receptionist making like $13 an hour and working, you know, going after work to like improv stuff. Mm-hmm. And then what ended up happening was gradually as I started like feeling less, you know, like less fulfillment at work or just like discovering that, you know, I found more fulfillment and more community in comedy and more of like, this is like the pillar. And then when I started getting good, but like I always found fulfillment. But then, yeah, like that high that I experienced when I would get like a good show or something. Yeah. And then like it stopped. It really helped me like soften the blow of like corporate shit of like when my boss is a dick to me or when I got fired or this and that. Like I always had comedy. And then I got fired from an agency like in 2015. And then that's when I was like, you know, I'm going to really try to do this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's been like back and forth and all this stuff. But yeah, it's really just at the center of it was like, it started out as a hobby and gradually more and more became a passion. And then, you know, like when I fail in comedy, which happens, you know, when I get rejected, I don't get cast in something, I don't get this job, or even like in the writing jobs that I get, I'm treated like shit, or I, you know, my things don't go up. Like, mm-hmm. it's never like, am I gonna quit? It's just like, I can accept it. And you know, I'm like, well, I still get joy and fulfillment from this thing. Yeah. So I'm gonna keep doing it. Whereas like other careers, I was like, I hate this. I'm never going to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. They like criticize you and it's like, I don't even, this is pointless.
Yeah. Like this matters nothing to me. So
yeah. At least I feel like being in high school in DC era, you probably had a lot of like do-gooders who were like expected to do like the lawyer path too. I feel like us and probably half of the people listening to this podcast were considered law school. You took it farther than I ever did.
Oh geez. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of kids from my high school went to law school or went to like, I don't know, do like political stuff just because it's DC area world. But I don't know. It's really spread out. But yeah, I mean, I do think that a lot of people from my area end up working in government in some way because they will go to a Virginia school and that'll kind of funnel you into a government.
This is like, at least like you do work in government. Like a lot of people read the newsletter. Like you work in politics, for sure. Yeah. You don't work in government. You work in politics.
Media,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah. I never know how to like qualify myself as like, cause really my main job is that I'm a comedian and I'm an actress, but I also do, you know, we talk about politics on this podcast and I write this newsletter. And so I do have like responsibilities to, you know, put information that is correct or correct information that is wrong. Like, so it's kind of, I feel like I live in this weird, like, I guess like John Stewart-y world where like you do have a responsibility and you are doing like journalism light and like you talk about things that are serious and you have to take them seriously while also primarily seeing myself as a comedian.
I would say that it's even like a more, I mean, you're, you know, not a journal, whatever, but like, it is like a more nuanced, difficult skill to like, you know, be able to tell people what's going on in the world and then try to like not make light of it but like find a comedic angle, which
and it's tough because like there definitely are people who just object to the idea of joking about the news. And so there are times sometimes where I'll get a message who's like you can't like say jokes about this. And I always like make sure that the subject of my joke, you know, it's that thought of like not punching down. Like I make sure that even if I'm talking in a joking way about a serious subject, that I'm never like making fun of the victim of that or whatever.
Yeah.
But sometimes I get a message where I'm just like, okay, so you just object to like satirical portrayals of the news, which is what this is. So you know what? I guess you shouldn't sign up for this newsletter. Like, if that upsets you and it doesn't, you don't like that. Okay. But then this maybe is not for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a weird spot to be in. So Simone Biles recently set an example of basically choosing not to sacrifice herself for her job. I was curious if either of you have ever like walked away from a professional opportunity because of the potential impact on your mental health, emotional health, or you just knew that it wasn't going to be worth it. Well, while recognizing that like being able to walk away is usually a privilege.
I would say that like, I was always like nervous to quit things. So I would just like not, I would cease being a useful employee. And if I didn't like a situation, I would just kind of like, instead of ghosting, I would slow fade, which is that I would just like,
I'm in favor of that.
Stop my duties.
I'm generally in favor of like, let them keep paying you.
Yeah,
until
no, that's
they're
a good
gonna
point.
Bother.
I will say the one time I fully ghosted a job was in college. I worked, before like I became a person, basically like when I started working full-time for Betches, that's when I became like a full-time employee of anything. And then when I left at full-time at Betches in like 2018, I started to become like a full-time actor comedian on my own. But before that, I always juggled a gazillion jobs. Even in college, I would have a gazillion jobs. And one of my jobs briefly was calling people and asking them for money, which is a terrible job that every university has. And I did it for about, I would say maybe a month. Mm-hmm. And then one day I was in my college apartment and I was making a fake jetpack for my annual birthday space party, which I would have every year. And it was themed. The theme was what you or someone you know would wear to space. And I was building a jetpack and my phone went off to say I had to go to work. And I saw it and I was like, I'm not going to go. And I'm also never going to go again. And I just
Is it like, did you
actually, I quit.
Did you start to feel the relief of letting yourself not go? It's like, and then you were like, oh yeah, no, now that I've experienced this moment of not go, I can never go back.
It was a huge moment because like prior to that, I think I always, and I talk about this a lot in my other podcast, The Roast of Your Teenage Self, but I was always very nervous to like break rules or make anybody mad at me. And so the thought of like quitting and doing it in like a bad way was something that I was like, you can't do that. What will the University of Delaware do if I don't show up for my calling shift? And then when I did it and they literally never contacted me once and I eventually just got my last check in the mail and they seriously did not say, didn't say shit to me about never showing up again. I was like, oh, you can actually do stuff like this.
Yeah. I feel like that's a lesson that everybody learns at some point where it's like,
I mean, if you have a more important job, you can, but.
Well, the thing is like,
life moves on.
You know, I'm very easy to read, like my face and my facial and my attitude, which is like, I guess good or bad, but I think that maybe subconsciously I'll ghost and like start disassociating and maybe my bosses can tell. I like rarely quit things. Like I've quit some jobs like where it was so bad, but I had something else lined up. Mm-hmm. But I rarely quit things like, but I ghost emotionally.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think like, and stop showing up and they can probably tell and they'll just fire me. But I think for me, this is a huge lesson now that I'm learning, like in my comedy career, you know, there's definitely can be a scarcity mindset of like, if I don't say yes to this, they're going to start asking me if I don't try to do this, like, even though I know it's not a good fit or I know that it's going to be bullshit. Like, I'm scared like that, you know, I'm not going to have another opportunity and people are going to forget me and all that stuff. And literally like, you know, there was this one opportunity where I knew coming in that it was going to be bad and I knew it wasn't going to be a fit, and everyone I talked to was said it was dumb, and then I did it, you know, I did it. I'm like, well, it won't affect me that much, and it really did, like, negatively affect my mental health, and it was really bad. And my therapist, you know, sometimes your therapist say shit and, like, they mean it, like, sincerely, but it's just so, like, she's like, well, maybe next time you can, you know, learn to say no. And I'm like, okay, fuck you. But it's true. Like, it is such a, it is such a, like, a thing, you know, of, like, not saying no and not walking away, but it is, like, you have to, because you know.
I agree with that 100%. Like, I think in acting and comedy, I feel the same way, where, like, when I was first getting into it, I would take every single opportunity, no matter how much, how crazy it was, or how little the pay was, or how, if there was pay at all, like, I would do anything with, like, you know, no time constraints, this, that. Like, I remember one time there was, like, a job that came through, like, UCB used to send out, like, acting jobs. A lot of them were bad. And I took one where it was like $75. And I ended up going to a warehouse for, like, 9 hours, no AC. They fake tear gassed me.
Oh my God.
And I was like, that was the day where I was like, I can't do shit like this for $75. Like,
exactly. You have to learn the hard way.
Yeah. I know. I was like, I gotta have more respect for myself than to be, like, sweated out and tear gassed for $75.
Yeah.
For a show starring a puppet? No. No, we can't.
Yeah, I mean, that was my next question, which, like, I mean, you both have already touched on this, but when every job you're saying no to is, like, a paycheck you're not taking, whereas, like, you know, I've never had to walk away from something big because of my mental health, but I feel like I do it in, like, a more daily basis, weekly basis, where it's like, I know sometimes I'm disappointing people, but I'm like, I simply cannot. I know myself, and I know if I can't get everything done or done well, or I can't push myself one day, it's like, I just know that because I've had, like, breaks before, and it's like, I'm not going to go there again. Like, I can't. Like, during 2020, between March when the pandemic started and November 7th when they announced that Trump lost, I didn't, like, take a breath at all. Yeah. And after that, like, my body, like, my hair was falling out. And and I'll be clear, nobody was making me do this. I felt a duty to, like, nobody makes me explain every single, like, even when we do, like, analytics meetings at Betches, they'll be like, you know, the stories, they don't get that. You don't have to do that many. Like, but I was, they don't really get a spot. Like, it's okay. But I just felt like such a duty, and we all felt so powerless, such, like, have any power. But by the end of that, I just was like, my body felt a way it had never before. And I was like, I cannot. So now I'm more like, I do say no to things sometimes, and I can tell people are kind of like, she can't just do that. But I'm like, no, because if I don't say no consistently, then it's going to be, like, a big no down the line where we're going to have like a problem. Like, if I can't, like, I got to do this podcast every day. If we don't do this podcast, we don't get, like, I have to. So I have to manage myself in other areas to make sure that I can, like, show up here every day to avoid sort of a big thing. But the difference between me and you guys is that I earn a salary. And, like, you guys, every time you say no, it's a paycheck. So when did you get to the point, Elise? It sounds like it was in that moment when you were being fake tear gas, that you were like, you know what? I don't need the $75.
I feel like I did not get to the point where I could really start turning stuff down until the past couple of years. I would say the first year where I had left being full-time at Betches, I did have a lot of that. Like, I got to say yes to everything, because I got to, I got to make this freelance thing work. Like, I made a really big choice to say, and Betches was really supportive to say, like, I have all these other projects. I can see where my career is going. I can't also have a full-time job, but let's figure this out. So I was like, I have to, you know, make this work. So I think I felt really like I do have to take every job, like, weird copywriting job, weird this and that. Like, there was a lot of, like, just strange, bizarre, like, I was writing articles about, like, the, like, investment for, like, weird, like, just, like, trying to be like, I have to make this work. And then I think now that I do feel like my acting situation is a lot more established because I left my full-time job to invest in that. And I have more solid gigs there. And I now I qualified for SAG insurance this year, which is it's like a really, it really changed the situation.
So your leap of faith to leave a full-time job worked.
But I would say, it took a year and a half, 2 years. There was a pandemic in the middle of that. It was pretty crazy. But I feel like probably in the last year, I've been in a place where I can say, I actually don't need that check, or I don't need to answer this particular opportunity or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm still working on that right now. Literally right now, I'm in a place where, I just had a gig and it really wrecked me mentally. And my hustler mindset's okay, what's next? What's next? But I know that I need a break. I'm burnt out. I haven't had a break or had time. And I have it so that financially, because I've made all these sacrifices, because even while I was working these writing jobs, I kept two or three jobs at the same time. Mm-hmm. While I was staff writing on TV shows, I was working, making memes for Netflix and always doing Betches. I love doing Betches.
Yeah.
But always keeping multiple gigs at once. Now I'm in a place where I financially can take a month or two off, which it's really, I'm really having a hard time with, because I'm having a hard time though, because I'm and it's month off, right? But I'm still doing Betches, I'm still auditioning, and I'm still submitting to shows. But
you're doing stand-up, and you're doing comedy.
So the only thing you mean is that you're still doing a ton of unpaid labor. We pay you, but mostly unpaid labor.
Yeah, no, I get paid here, but I'm saying I'm doing things that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but you are still working. You're not just
working, but it's not I'm not hustling for the three or four jobs, And that's crazy to me, and it's super uncomfortable and makes me unsettled. But also I know that I need it because I'm so burnt.
Yeah.
And I'm so not healed from this experience that I had. And I mean, that's just a new experience. And I think I've talked about this before on Betches of women, not to be girl bossy Sheryl Sandberg, but women are conditioned to not say no, what I mean? Or it's bad to say no and you're selfish. And I think that it takes years to unlearn. And then it also takes years to get comfortable. Like you're saying, Amanda, of it took that really difficult experience. It took at least getting tear gassed to realize oh shit. Yeah. Buy a puppet.
$75.
Listen, I've done some dumb shit. Don't even get me started. I said no to a catering gig, or I fucking ghosted a catering gig to do this gig for BET and BET, fuck BET. And then first of all, the BET gig was I was a bad job interview applicant where I didn't put my phone on silent and my phone kept ringing during the job interview. And they're like, can you put that on silent? I'm like, no. And then I was supposed to get $100 for that job. So, and I'm like, this is my big break, whatever. Fucking, they took 9 months to pay me that $100. And then when I finally got it, honey, they took the tax out. So $85.91.
Oh my God, the freelancer's song.
Yeah. Just stopped babysitting last year. I just stopped. And it wasn't even my choice. The kids got too old. I babysit these kids for 10 years. And the parents were always like, you sure? And I'm like, but then eventually I was like, I'm spending more on the cabs that I'm taking for convenience because I'm an adult and I'm not going to take the subway at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday. Not that that's a problem, but I only
used to stop babysitting. Exactly.
In my early days, in my youth, I would be on the train, off the train, uptown, all over.
Never in a car.
Ridiculous. Going all over just to get little sums of money and pick kids up and drop them off and teach them this and go around. And then I worked selling Broadway tickets.
Oh, I worked.
I've done a lot of jobs. I was always running all over the place.
I canvassed for ACLU.
Canvassing. I had to quit a canvassing job once. I quit canvassing for Obama in 2008 because I worked all over the place for Hillary. And then Hillary, her concession speech, she was like, y'all, you have to go work for Obama, please. And I was like, I'll do it for her. And then after my second day of getting the door slammed in my face, it's like, I'm not going back. But I feel like hearing the quote, I think it's originally an Oprah quote, but no is a complete sentence. Like that changed everything for me. I repeat that to myself all the time. Like you don't owe anyone an explanation. No is a complete sentence. Is that easier to say than to actually practice, do you think?
Oh, it's hard for like work. It's hard in relationships. It's hard with family. That, you know, that's just, but it's important because, you know, I mean, I think that people really look down on aging, like, oh my God, I want to be young forever. But I'm like, no, I'm really like happy to be older because I know myself so much. And I'm like, I already know that, like, if I say yes to this, like, I'm going to be fucking burnt out or I'm going to be this or I'm going to be that. And then, so like, I'm already doing that. And then that's when I can say no wisely, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. 30s is good.
30s is great.
Yeah, my foot clicks now, but other than that.
Oh, my knees click?
Something's really wrong with my foot, but other than that,
my knees make noise, and I have a stomach ache all the time. I feel like what I'm living, I can't even tell you what I was doing in my 20s. Like, I literally have no idea. Me and my friends, we'll call it the lost 20s.
Totally.
Because, like, especially because I have some friends that I met when we were all in our 30s. And, like, they'll tell me about past lives they've had. And I'm like, yeah. Like, in my past life, I was, like, a Japanese businesswoman. Like, or I worked for different Japanese companies and, like, wore suits. It was terrible. But, But I think I'm living the life that I thought I was going to live in my 30s. Like, I thought, like, everyone's going to have their own apartments. We're going to go out to dinner all the time. And no, everyone was broke and, like, having sex with terrible people. And now we all, like, can go out to nice dinners. And,
I know,
like,
it is so silly that in your 20s, you're like, is this the right path? Is this the right direction? It's like, we sort of started getting this at the beginning. But, like, I think I've, like, a job is a job. You're going to be, jobs are miserable. Work sucks. Like if you have a job, this is the way capitalism works. Companies exist. Like, they don't make a profit unless they exploit you for more than they pay you. So it's always going to be annoying.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
This brings me to sort of my next question, because all three of us sort of do things, like, our jobs rely on our brains, our natural curiosity, just the things that pop into our head. And so I find it hard to take the advice of, like, your job is not who you are. It's okay. Don't worry about the criticism. Don't worry about the lack of success. The criticism is not criticism of you. It's of the work. But those things are sometimes the same. How do you guys, like, how do you manage that? How do you apply the advice? Because AOC talked about this recently on on an Instagram story specifically about when she was a bartender. And that's how she really learned, I'll quote her, not to work for 100% of your satisfaction in life. It should not and cannot come all from your job, no matter how great or how hard your job is. So yeah, how do you apply that advice to like keep some distance when your work is so close to like who you are and it can't help but always feel personal?
Well, I think like, you know, I'm Buddhist. So like in Buddhism, the goal is like, you can't seek anything like happiness outside of yourself. Yeah. So it's just like in a work, in a relationship, in money, like it just, that doesn't exist. And like, I tried to have that philosophy in that thing of like, nothing's going to give me joy outside myself. It is difficult though, because you do tie your identity, but at the same time, I think of it like this of like, comedy is like, you know, you're never, like where I'm at now is where I wanted to be 5 years ago, but right. I'm not where I want to be right now, you know? And mm-hmm. it's always going to be a thing, but it's just like enjoying life in general between that. And as much as I love comedy, like it's just something that I also realized too, of like, I never want to get to the point where I can't like go out with my friends or enjoy my life, like go on a vacation or do stuff or like have fun, you know, like that my entire life 24/7 is comedy, because that's just like not a good balanced life, you know, and I'm not really getting the value out of, or, you know, that's personally for me. And I think, yeah, I think that, you know, it's all about I think for me, like it's trying to get that balance, it's trying to get that joy. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like that's also an age thing. Like after 30, where it's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I do, because there's other stuff. There's other stuff in life.
Well, that's totally just in marketing too. Like that is like a value system of millennials, of like versus like boomers and Gen Xers, of like, you know, boomers before it was like your success was measured. This is like marketing 101, like, you know, success was measured in things, house, 2.5 kids, nice bags, nice shoes. Millennials are very much about experiences. And there's many things that contribute to that, right? Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, it's because the housing market shit and it's like harder, and then student loans and stuff. So we can't like buy houses and do that stuff easily, but we can like go to a music festival and Instagram and like basically make it so that we're all jealous of each other's, like, you know, oh, go on vacation, oh, travel, oh, this, oh, that. Like that is more of a status symbol than like having a nice house or not having roommates and stuff, you know? So like, in that thing very much is like, yeah, I want to be able to experience and live life. And it is really difficult to manage when your like identity is like, oh, am I good at this? Am I a good comedian? Like other people are booking all these things. I'm not, you know, it's really difficult. And you know, one more point before I stop is like, which I lost it as I was talking, whatever. But like, there are other people, like everyone's on their own path, but like, like that was a conscious decision of like, I saw people who, you know, quote unquote made it before me. They got their first TV writing job, or they acted on this big thing like way before I did. And I would beat myself up like, oh, they're better than me. And then I kind of look at their life. Sometimes they have rich parents, which is a whole other thing. But other times, like a lot of times these people, like, you know, they were like eating shit, like living, sleeping on people's couches, not working just 100%, like in comedy, auditioning, whatever. And like, and then they made it eventually, but like on the path, like they couldn't go out to dinners or they couldn't go to a concert. And I'm just kind of like resigned with myself of like, okay, well, I'm not going to make it as quickly as this person, but like, I'm going to enjoy my life. You know, I'm going to go on a vacation, and you know, it sucks that I have to work a day job, but I also like can go out to eat, or I can like buy this nice dress or something like that. So those are things too, that like, those were values that I kind of made reconciled with myself of like, I'm going to make it no matter what, but like, it's okay if it goes a little slower, because I want my life to be rich in this certain way.
Yeah, I'm so glad there's been a little more suspicion of like the grind lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had like a similar realization at one point, just dealing with the same stuff, like comparison, being like, oh my God, this person is younger than me and came up so much faster than me and like whatever. But then there was a point where I took a step back and it's like, okay, yeah, maybe in this time period, I didn't like get this writing job or whatever, but I did meet someone and build a relationship with them and fall in love with them. And now I'm getting married, and that like took time and energy and effort and like work. And a lot of people who come up super fast or like give so much to their job, they're not able to do that. And maybe if I had been more singularly focused on my job and stuff, I wouldn't have been able to like give the this relationship the time or notice that this relationship had the potential or whatever, you know? And like, that's a form of success too.
Yeah. And now I feel like, I know this is really like heartwarming, but I feel that way too. And it's like, I feel a lot less connected to my job, because it's like, I'm very connected to it, but I'm like, if it went away, I would have my relationship and I would still have a lot of amazing things in my life because I worked at one point to build those things, maybe at the expense of like something else at the time. Like, I know I've lost compete. Like a couple of years ago, I would like apply for jobs and they'd be like, we're looking for a rock star who's good at everything. And I'd be like, I'm not a rock star. I'm glad finally people are like, I don't want to be a fucking rock star. This is my job. Why do I have to be a rock star? Why do I have to rise and grind? You pay me to work 40 hours a week.
Fucking like, descriptions that are like, we need a ninja who can. Like, and it's just like, no, you need someone with the bachelor's degree. So why don't we cut the shit?
And honestly, do you even need somebody with a bachelor's degree?
Honestly, are you going to check if I say I have one?
I mean, and also for people who don't have a relationship.
How do you find meaning beyond work, Millie? How could you possibly?
I'm just saying for me.
No. I hear what you're saying too, for sure. And yeah, I think that it's also like, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think that that is a good point, and like, there's value in different things. And it's also like, I've gotten to a point where I've, you know, cultivated a lot of really great friendships. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just going through a really difficult time in my life right now. And it's just really nice to have all these friends supporting me that I can go do things and go out. But like, that took years of, you know, You know, it's not also just about
that's labor too. Like we frame this is a perfect ending for our Labor Day episode. It's like you're all describing labor that we've been putting in over the past 15 years to make our lives what it was, and that did not apply strictly to the jobs that we had. Like the effort that you're putting in, it does accumulate and it matters.
Yeah, of course. And it's again like, you know, it could be like going out. It's like going out for like a friend's birthday or going to do another comedy show or doing this or doing that. And it's just like, yeah, like I'll always, you know, like it's all about balance, you know, for me, at least that's what I try is like, yes, I want to be, you know, extremely successful and stuff. But, you know, life is not about, you know, when you die, this is like a kind of paraphrased Buddhist quote, but it's like when you die, no one's going to remember how much money you had or anything. It's just how you made people feel. Mm-hmm. And I try to remember that too, of like, I want my life to be, you know, relationships. You know, I want to be comfortable, but I also, like I want to see and do things too.
So. Yeah. I also feel like the past like 5 years have so democratized like entertainment and media that anyone can become famous and go viral at any time. So it's like, today wasn't my day. Maybe it's tomorrow. Like the traditional paths are not there, which the kind of free for all, I don't know, makes it a little easier to just let the chips fall.
Well, you know, anybody can be an influencer now. There was like a thing of like, 22,000 people in America have 1 million YouTube subscribers. Like, it's just so much more of a, like there's less gatekeeping in that way, you know? Yeah. So that's really cool.
Well, I mean, and Millie, I'm sure you remember this, but when we were first coming up in comedy, to make a sketch video that anybody watched, like you would have to like literally someone would have to have like an expensive camera. You would have to hire someone with an expensive camera. It would have to get edited. And a lot of people who were successful in sketch at that time were people who had a lot of money and resources. Like I remember like my improv team, we would always try to make videos and we had such a hard time getting sound. Like it was just like, and like, it was tough. And then people who like, either had access to that kind of equipment because of work or had money to buy it for themselves, like they could rise to the top. And I just think it's so interesting to see now in this TikTok era, like it's all of that is moot. I mean, you could spend money to make a sketch if you wanted, but now
right. Like, you could also just do nothing and go viral on TikTok wearing your pajamas.
You can do it on your phone.
You can do it on your phone to like throw together a video. And I think it's enabled so many, especially like you see so many good creators of color and like women and all of this stuff, like people who have been traditionally kept out of just like production and knowing how to do production on their own. Like they, they've risen to the top of all this, like the front facing comedy videos, Twitter comedy videos, TikTok comedy videos. Like once it was democratized and you could see who was actually the funniest.
Exactly.
Guess who, guess who it is.
Yeah. I just also want to say before we finish, meritocracy does not exist.
No,
it is not a thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the gatekeepers of before will say it is a thing, but it's not. It's
and bullshit. When you realize that, I feel like work becomes a little, I think when you're younger, you assume that all of your bosses are amazing and they're better. Like there's a reason everybody gets where they are. And I've had enough jobs by now. It's like things settle into place for a lot of reasons. And because these people are the smartest people to be doing that are not always it. So like when you have questions, ask questions. When you want to push back, push back. These people are not
sometimes
God.
It's like no one else wants that job.
It was all women in Andrew Cuomo's office. And people probably should have pushed them a little harder. That is our time. Thank you gals for this conversation. Happy Labor Day until the end of democracy. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Lily Tamaris.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
Bye.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.